Welcome to another edition of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. So pleased you could join us today. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, along with my co-host, Nate Atkins. And we're going to have a fun edition today. Talk a little bit about the changing media relations landscape across the NFL. We have a couple of great guests that we're going to bring on. Matthew Fairburn of the Syracuse Post-Standard covers the Buffalo Bills and is going to kind of bring us inside their sort of extreme new media policy that I know Matt will break down for us in just a couple minutes. And we'll also be joined by D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, kind of bringing in the sort of juxtaposition. The Falcons are welcoming in reporters for film studies and opening up their mini camps to the public. So we thought it'd be fun to kind of take a look at the contrast between these two teams and how they're approaching their media policies. D is also the former PFWA president, so he'll be able to also provide some insight on the Buffalo Bills. But before we dive in, Nate, how are we doing today?
Doing great, and it's good to be back in the studio here where we have so much fun all the time, and excited to talk today just about a little bit about how other people cover teams, because we were out there last year covering the Bears, and we saw a little bit of their shenanigans, putting some restrictions in, and I feel like we've talked about how we weren't that vocal, and then you see the Bills stuff go down where they sent out a new media policy, and all of a sudden a lot of those beat writers are very vocal, and you see them start to walk it back. So I'm excited to get Matt Fairburn's take on that, especially since we go way back to college, all the early days of the Maneater student newspaper and him writing on wrestling and me being a sports editor and putting out the best college wrestling stories you've ever seen in your life. So excited to get into it with him.
I don't doubt that at all. As soon as we finish this podcast, I'm going to be Googling old college wrestling stories from both Nate and Matt. But
no, that's a joke. Please don't.
We'll get in with Matt in just a second. I also want to thank Dan Mata, as always, for spinning the dials for us, and John Solly for helping produce. Couldn't do this podcast without them, and hopefully they'll chime in a little bit today as well. So without further ado, we've told you what we're doing here. We want to bring in Matthew Fairburn of the Syracuse Post-Standard covering the Buffalo Bills. Excuse me, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Outstanding. Well, we're glad to hear you are still doing well. There has been some ruffled feathers from the Buffalo Bills beat, and we understand it completely. So I'm going to let you kind of bring the listeners up to speed. Obviously, this new media policy kicked in last week, but why don't you kind of take us through some of the nuts and bolts and what's going on there?
Yeah, so last week the Bills were scheduled to have their first OTA session that was open to the media. They, have the minimum amount of OTA sessions open to the media. And about an hour before they had that practice open, they dropped the new media policy, which they hadn't updated the media policy since I've been on the beat, which is right before the 2014 season. So they haven't updated this thing. Mm-hmm. They come out with a new media policy, which essentially, I mean, for all intents and purposes, barred us from reporting on mostly everything. We couldn't report on interceptions that happened at practice or dropped passes or, little things like that. There was restrictions about where we could stand, where we couldn't stand, all sorts of things like that. And the way they wrote the policy, which I think is kind of important to note, they wrote the policy in a way that it seemed like it would extend to training camp as well, and those practices for the Bills at least are open to the public. So there was a lot of pushback right away from local media, and I think the fact that guys like Mike Rodak from ESPN, who covers the Bills out here, Tyler Dunn from the Buffalo News, these guys that have big reaches nationally, they started voicing some of their concerns. It caught steam pretty quickly among some national media, and local beat reporters, national guys have all said this is pretty much the most restrictive policy that they have seen, and it made for an interesting day at practice. We were finding creative ways to get around these restrictions and things like that, and it caused the Bills to walk back a lot on some of this stuff that they put in place.
Yeah, Matt, I was following a lot of it on Twitter. I know you were a little vocal about it, and those guys you mentioned were. And I was just curious if you could give us a feel for what is the normal contingency of Bills media around there. I mean, we all know it's one of the stronger fan bases in the NFL, but one of the smaller markets, and just want to kind of contrast that with some of the other the other ones out there. So how many guys or girls are normally on the Bills beat, and what would you say is kind of the breakdown? Were you guys mostly in agreement on this? Were media members kind of split? How did it go?
Yeah, so we have Rodak covers the team for ESPN. The Buffalo News has three dedicated beat reporters, two columnists, and an enterprise reporter. We've got Channel 7, Channel 2. So we got three TV stations. One guy is a beat reporter for that TV station, Joe Biscaglia. We have an AP writer. The Rochester Democrat and Chronicle covers the team, and then we cover the team. So we got a pretty, you know, even though it's a small market, it's a very interesting media market because there are quite a few people covering the team because the Bills are kind of the only show in town. And I would say for the most part, everybody was in agreement on this. Now, I will say what makes this interesting is, in addition to the reporters I just mentioned, we also have BuffaloBills.com and WGR.com, and those are both team affiliates. Obviously, BuffaloBills.com is owned by the team. So technically, you know, some people would consider those people beat reporters, but they're doing a different job, I think, than most of us. They obviously were not on our side when we started voicing our complaints and tweeting out, you know, some funny stuff during practice to try to get around the policy. And they certainly weren't on our side when, you know, we had the discussion with the PR staff after practice about the whole thing. And that's when they started walking back on a lot of it. And, you know, that's when, you know, some of the beat guys, I mean, we have Vic Carucci, who, you know, like the Orlando Ledbetter, has been on the Bills beat for a while. He recently rejoined it. We have some guys that have been around for a while. They have some pull. And I think that helped us when it came time to push back a little bit on this.
Chatting with Matthew Fairburn of the Syracuse Post-Standard. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Matthew Fairburn. Matt, I think in addition to some of the longtime reporters you just talked about, I think maybe what made this in part surprising is that historically the Bills have been known for having a terrific media relations staff and really going out of their way to try and help reporters over the years. So I think hearing Rex Ryan kind of say, well, this was up to the media relations staff and Scott Burchtold, who's been doing this forever, maybe caught some people a little bit off guard. Obviously, there's new ownership there as well. What does your gut tell you where this is coming from? I mean, typically it's kind of the coaches, I think, who direct the PR on how they want things to kind of go.
Right. I mean, everybody wants Scott Burchtold to take the fall for this. And right. I guess that's part of the job description when you're a PR guy and the head of public relations for an NFL team, you take the fall for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But I think we'd all be naive to think that this is coming from Scott Burchtold and Scott Burchtold alone. I don't know that he would necessarily go out of his way to do something like this. Like you said, I think they've been over the years about middle of the road when it comes to access. They're not inviting us in for film sessions, but they haven't really restricted how I do my job since I've been here, at least. But, you know, my gut tells me this is coming from higher than that. Ownership had to have signed off on this. And I have to think Rex Ryan had some input as well, which I think is part of what made it such a big story is, like I said, not only are the Bills traditionally pretty open when it comes to media, but we're talking about Rex Ryan, who has a reputation as a guy who's not afraid to open his mouth, and he's pretty friendly to the media. So it doesn't necessarily match up in that sense. But I think this is coming from higher than that because, like I mentioned, they got BuffaloBills.com. They've got WGR. The Pagulas are starting their own network. The Pagula Sports and Entertainment Group is trying to bring a lot of the media in-house. And I think by restricting what we can report, you know, from when things aren't going well, that kind of levels the playing field with BuffaloBills.com and things like that. I think they're trying to push a lot of things that way, which is obviously for us a concerning trend, but it's tough to know exactly where this policy came from because everybody will have a different story. But my gut tells me it's coming from a lot higher than just Scott Burchtold.
Hey, Matt, this is John Solly. As someone who isn't a beat reporter and isn't going out to practice every week, you had mentioned that this new policy may sound like it extends to training camp. What's to stop a fan from showing up to training camp and just putting the whole thing on Periscope.
Yeah, I mean, that was our exact point, because they wrote this policy so vague and so overreaching that it did apply to training camp. And my response was, you know, if that's going to be the case, I'll turn my credential in and go sit in the stands and I'll tweet out everything. And I'll, like you said, put it on Periscope. And that's been a frustrating thing too for some of the TV guys. There's portions of practice that are restricted in terms of what you can shoot on video and with stills. Whereas, like you said, a guy could be sitting up in the stands and he could Periscope the entire practice. Not just that, other NFL teams can send a scout and he can sit up there and tape the entire thing on his phone. So I don't buy into the competitive advantage in terms of, especially with training camp practices that are open to the public. I mean, NFL teams not only can send scouts to other training camp practices, they absolutely do. And, you know, all the guy has to do is wear a Bills hat, walk in and take out his camera, and he can have any bit of information he wants about what Rex Ryan is doing at practice. And so that was something they walked back on right away. They said this media policy will not apply to training camp because those are open to the public. This is just OTA practices. And they even seemed a little bit lenient on how they're going to enforce it at OTAs. And I've been able to get away with pretty much everything I got away with last year in reporting from OTA practices. So I think the pushback had the desired effect because they definitely walked back on a lot of it.
Yeah, we're chatting here with Matthew Fairburn of the Syracuse Post-Standard, and just for a little background, this is going to be his third season on the Bills beat after going to school at Mizzou with me, and I have to give a plug to the Tigers because three of us sitting here in the studio, Arthur, John, and me, all went to Mizzou, and also they're relevant because they're known as one of the worst college PR staff, so we've had a little bit of experience with that. Matt and I were both on the Mizzou football beat at the time, but I got to ask you about this, Matt, because we kind of ran into this last year with the Bears and John Fox stepping in and putting in some restrictions, and I feel like as a media member, as a beat writer, you're in a weird spot a little bit because you want to let the readers and the fans know that the lack of reporting isn't just laziness or you not doing your job, but at the same time, you do sometimes see some pushback from fans who kind of, I don't know if they feel a little weary about sports writers complaining about their jobs and they think it's a matter of, oh, you just want to know everything. From my perspective, and I've talked to other media guys on this, it's not that we just are nosy and, oh, I just want to know this so I can know this. It's that this is, you know, it's our job, but also the media is the conduit to the fans. And so when they restrict access at these practices like this, the end result is just the fans know less about it. And as a media person who went into this field to inform people, that's what frustrates me the most. I didn't know what your take was on that and if you kind of feel the same way.
Yeah, that's been a really interesting part of this whole ordeal is there are some fans who, you know, were mad about the media policy and thought it was stupid and all of that and took our side. But there is definitely a good segment of the fan base that doesn't want to hear complaints. Like you said, you know, it's viewed as us complaining about our job, which isn't necessarily, you know, what we were trying to do. And there were certain fans who said, good, like, don't let the media report. We don't want their negativity. Maybe that's just Bills fans. I think that's football fans all over the country, but Bills fans are very protective of their team. They think, you know, the media is so negative. Even though the team hasn't been to the playoffs in 16 years. But that's what I talk about when I say they're pushing some of this media in-house. You're getting fed the company line from BuffaloBills.com and from WGR a lot of the time. They're not quite as much as BuffaloBills.com, but there is a fan that just wants to hear the good news and they don't want to hear the bad news. And that's what makes it interesting because there was definitely some pushback from fans on that. And you know, you bring up the point that this does affect the fans. I don't think some fans don't see it that way. Some fans mm-hmm. don't want the information from OTAs and things like that. And I think our main issue with the policy boiled down to the Bills PR staff was trying to tell us what was and wasn't newsworthy from an OTA practice. And by extension, they were basically saying the fans weren't smart enough to figure out, you know, they don't want us reporting Tyrod Taylor's completion percentage. because they don't think it's fair to report that during OTAs when he's working through some things. But to me, that's for me to decide, and you know, other reporters for to decide. And if the fans want that information, it's ultimately up to them. That's what determines whether it's news. And the fans will be able to tell the difference between Tyrod Taylor's completion percentage in OTAs versus his completion percentage week one against the Ravens. And to think that your fans won't be able to tell the difference is an insult to a fan base that I think is one of the best in the league. And to me, that was what, you know, the issue really boiled down to. They're trying to protect these players at time of year when they're trying to develop. But, you know, the NFL created this. They became a 12-month-a-year news cycle, and they made themselves this big of a deal. So if they didn't want, you know, this type of attention, good and bad, this is what they signed up for.
And I have no doubt that they're trying to protect the players, but it would seem obviously more than anything they're trying to protect themselves, of course. And I think the timing, I don't know, is it naive of me to think that it was just coincidence that the Bills landed in all kinds of, not to say that, you know, they were all self-created, but you had obviously the Shaq Lawson injury and the Sammy Watkins injury all kind of occurring at once. It seemed like all that happened the week before this media policy was introduced. And like you said, the media policy was introduced an hour before you guys got there. Does it seem like maybe any part of this was reactionary and kind of the way they were responding to maybe some of the negative publicity that had been created the week prior? Or is it really just a coincidence?
It could have been. It definitely could have been a little bit of that. They also, like I said, they haven't updated the policy in years.
Yeah.
And that's what they're kind of leaning on. They said that's why they did it. But, man, what a weird couple of weeks for the communication staff for the Bills, with those two things that you mentioned. Then the media policy, you know, they're trying to restrict the negative information that gets out. All of a sudden they create the biggest negative storyline they've had all offseason. And then on the same day, Doug Whaley goes on the flagship station and makes his comments about, you know, thinking that humans shouldn't be playing football. It was a pretty rough week for the Bills PR staff in general. And I think the timing of it was weird because, they were complaining that we didn't clear up stuff before we complained on Twitter. But I think the whole thing would have been received a lot differently if a couple weeks before OTAs, they called us all in and we went over it and we discussed it, you know, like professionals and like adults. But instead it was like the teacher came in and slapped a bunch of new rules on the desk without, you know, any discussion. It was like we were, you know, we have to play by their rules and all this. Instead of being treated as equals, we're kind of being treated as, you know, not as equals. And that's what I think ticked off a lot of people. And I think it helped this thing get legs a lot quicker than it has in other NFL markets where similar policies have been put in place.
For sure. And I just want to step back and go a little big picture here for just a moment, because I think a lot of people were surprised that the Bills were doing this, people outside of Buffalo, because there's this narrative out there that Rex Ryan is so good with the media. And I just want to get your perspective on what it's like to cover Rex Ryan. And is he the same thing with you guys on a local day-to-day basis as you often see in the sort of clips and the national stories and stuff like that? What's kind of the experience covering him, and how much different was that from covering Doug Marrone your first year?
You know, a lot of people are surprised when I say this, but I actually preferred covering Doug Marrone to covering Rex Ryan. And there's a few reasons why. I mean, you definitely get a lot of easy headlines with Rex Ryan. You get some great sound bites, some great quotes, and I get all of that. But from a beat writer standpoint, covering a guy like Rex Ryan is interesting because he has his relationships with the national media. He has his relationships with the New York media, and he didn't make much of an effort to develop those relationships locally and in Buffalo. And that has made it an interesting dynamic because he obviously didn't have a good year last year, and nobody in the Buffalo market was eating out of his hand. You know, by midseason, he was getting a lot of criticism. And I think he thought he could, he handled the New York media fine. How much worse could Buffalo be? And that kind of goes back to what we're talking about with this fan base. in this media market is that, yeah, it's not as big as New York City or Chicago or LA or Boston, but the Bills are the front page news 365 days out of the year. Mm-hmm. And so everything Rex Ryan does is going to be put under the microscope. And since he, you know, they're not, you know, blind to what he did with the Jets in his last 4 years because they were playing against him every year. So he got a lot more criticism than I think he expected to get. And that caused the relationship between him and, you know, some of the local beat reporters and columnists to sour a little bit. I think it created a little bit of a contentious environment at times. He's still, like I said, he's still great for a quote. He's still, you know, he can't resist, you know, talking up his team or, you know, making predictions or having fun and doing things like that. But he's not the open book. He's not the come into my office and watch some film or come into my office. And, you know, we all had one-on-ones with Rex informally to meet him when he got hired. But other than that, the access to him one-on-one is not easy to come by. Whereas with Doug Marrone, you could walk up to him after a press conference and talk to him. He was just more of a normal guy, whereas Rex Ryan is kind of this larger-than-life figure almost, and there's so much national attention that he doesn't feel like he needs us necessarily.
A ton of great stuff here from Matthew Fairburn of the Syracuse Post-Standard. We really do appreciate the time, and once we get closer to the season, we'd love to have you back on and talk, you know, about football things, and we'll resist the temptation to ask you questions that are going to back you into a corner of, you know, of defying the Bills media policy. How would you feel about coming back and joining us as we get closer to the season?
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. You know, it's been a strange off season in Buffalo, and I, for one, am excited to talk about football again, or at least whatever football I'm allowed to talk to or talk about. So, yeah, I'd be happy to join you guys, and you know, can't wait for the season to get going here.
Outstanding. That is Matthew. Thank you again very much. We'll look forward to that. A lot of good stuff with Matthew Fairburn, and it sounds like he is doing a nice job adapting. I know it's very early, and it's encouraging to hear that the way he is doing his job so far has been affected only, you know, minimally, but I understand all the descent to what's going on there. It is kind of disappointing, and as Nate said at the top of the program, I think maybe we're slightly numb to it because we've gone through it now. We're going on year two of the John Fox regime, so that's a whole nother podcast, though. We're going to have a whole nother segment momentarily. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we return on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, we will welcome in D. Orlando Ledbetter and talk a little Falcons media policy and also get his take on what's going on in Buffalo as the former PFWA president. That and more when we return. And we're back. The Pro Football Weekly podcast has returned. We're doing a special here on the changing media landscape, the media relations landscape across the NFL. I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Atkins. I am Arthur Arkish. Please give us a follow on Twitter at Nate Atkins CF and at Arthur Arkish. Our next guest, D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, has been covering the Falcons for a long time. He is a former Pro Football Weekly Writers of America president. He is the first Esquire we're bringing on the podcast. We are super excited to bring him on. D. Orlando Ledbetter, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great, Arthur and Nate. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Of course. We appreciate you joining us. We thought we didn't feel like we could really do this podcast without talking to you, frankly, and not only because we just had a discussion with Matthew Fairburn, Buffalo Bills beat writer, breaking down the new Bills media policy, but also what's going on with the Falcons. It seems like it is on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of how the PR staff is working with the media. So I want to definitely get your take on that for sure. But as a former Pro Football Weekly Writers of America president, I first have to ask, what do you think about this new Bills media policy that they released last week?
Well, I think it's overreaching. You know, they're going way beyond the bounds of any team that wants to have fair and objective coverage. You know, you have to remember what the mission is here. The media is trying to cover your team. You're trying to to connect to your fans that you're selling $8 beers to and selling you know, seat licenses to and you know, coming out to your ballpark. The conduit to those fans is the media. If you cut off that avenue to your fans, you're only hurting yourself. And the Bills don't seem to get that notion. It's a new media age, too, with the digital era, and they think they can maybe bypass that and go straight to the fans with their website and other avenues. But, you know, you traditionally have been built up through the media, and, you know, we still believe that there's some value there for what we do and the information we pass along to the readers and the fans in an unobjective, you know, in an objective manner. So, you know, it's a little bit overreaching. We do believe they'll come around, but right now it's not anything to be proud of by the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, great point by Daryl. And I have to ask, how long was your reign as the president of the PFWA? And during that time, or even before, I know you've been covering the league for a long time. Do you remember any other policies that seemed to overreach to this extent?
Well, we've had battles throughout the years. I was the president from 2013 to 15. Mm-hmm. You know, you have 4 years before that where you're the first vice and then the second vice. So it's a six-year term pretty much.
Okay.
And, you know, the big thing over the last, you know, I covered the Packers in the early 90s and the Bengals in the late 80s. So, you know, I've seen the whole thing change to where practices were open. You know, if there was a major injury, you know, they'd help you with it. To where now they try to, you know, Buffalo and Bill Buffalo now, but Bill Parcells and the Patriots have really tried to stomp out the media policy and kind of make, you know, dealing with the media an issue with regards to, you know, covering their team. You know, we've seen, you know, seen that in Denver when Adam Gase tried to highlight the media policy and how to get around it. And our job with the PFWA has been to, you know, challenge those teams and challenge those players who don't want to comply with the media policy that's handed out by the league and is also a part of their standard union contracts. You know, there's a media clause in there that says, hey, I'm going to deal with the media. Now, you know, certainly things have changed from when there was maybe one or two beat writers out at most of the camps. And, you know, I know in Green Bay they got close to 40 people covering the team. So the media demands do maybe have to be tailored and curtailed a little bit. But we've been willing to work with teams in that situation. So, you know, it's an ongoing situation, ongoing battle. When the coaches start to overreach, you know, that's where we have to try to step in and maybe get the league office and the PR department to understand that, hey, we're just trying to do a part of our job, which is to get the information to the fans.
Yeah, Dee, you mentioned you guys stepping in as the Pro Football Writers of America, stepping in with the league and enforcing some of this media policy. Just for our listeners who might not understand quite how that dynamic works, can you walk us through what can the PFWA do when a team comes out and violates the policy and they've agreed to it, all the teams agreed to, and then a team just wants to make a rule that doesn't follow that at all? What can you guys do as an organization to sort of get them back on track?
Well, you know, Jeff does it differently. We all have different styles. Jeff Wegwell, who's our president now. Normally, before you hear about anything publicly, we work the back channels with the teams, the PR directors, the league office, and going public is something of the last resort. And, you know, certainly in my time, there was the Marshawn Lynch issue where he didn't want to talk at the Super Bowl or in the NFC Championship game, came to find out that the Seattle press had kind of let him do that and not talk to the media or, you know, on his, on his own schedule. You know, only two players are allowed to be once-a-week guys. He hadn't talked in a year, and then they get to the playoff game against the Saints, the Earthquake game, and the national media wants to talk about the run. He doesn't want to talk about it. That's when it became was brought to our attention, and then we, you know, worked with the league and the team, and they tried to come up with something to where he thought all he had to do was be there for 6 or 7 minutes, which, you know, was the deal he cut with the league. And so then we had all of this. I'm just trying to I'm about to action the boss and all of that, which ended up being he's about to fine. He got fined in the end. They gave him every chance at both Super Bowls to comply with their policy, which we thought was a unique situation and a rule that they didn't enforce unilaterally. He should have been required to sit there just like everybody else. And, they gave him an out, and even when he couldn't comply with the minimum levels of his own out, did he get fined. So nobody wants players getting fined or, take their money off of them. We just want them to comply with the media policy, guys. And, it just struck me watching the Believe Land 30 for 30. Ernest Byner fumbled on the one-yard line. He stood there in his locker room. He stood there in his locker answering questions over and over and over about the fumble. Now, today, if that happens, I'm pretty sure we don't get that player.
Yeah, it's a great point by Daryl. And, we're taking a few minutes talking about the Bills media policy and how it was a total overreach. And Daryl has the unique perspective of, as you just mentioned, having been in charge of the PFWA. And it's fascinating to hear. It makes a lot of sense, but it's interesting to hear you say about how, a city by city media contingency may kind of enforce or not enforce rules to the same extent. So that just kind of speaks to the value of having the PFWA and the great work you guys are doing. I do want to take a little more local focus for you and talk about the Falcons and just your early impressions of Dan Quinn, obviously now entering year two. To me, it's a little bit fascinating because I saw the Falcons last week or 2 weeks ago said they were going to welcome in the media for this open film study. And I don't know if they've had one of those sessions yet, but I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about either what you have already experienced or what you're expecting from that, which is really, truly unique.
Yeah, last week we did tackling and special teams with Coach Quinn and special teams coordinator Keith Armstrong. And today we went over defensive alignment with Richard Smith, defensive coordinator, and Jerome Henderson, the passing game coordinator. They're talking about, we're playing cover three and, we got a nickel and this and that. And they showed us what it was on the screen, which, for a lot of, the radio guys or TV people that haven't been around much, they might not know football on that type of level. So it was designed as a educational piece for the media to help us better cover the team, which I believe is admirable of the Falcons. Instead of just if we blow a call or in a story or a call on a game and say, so and so got beat by a double team or something, and we don't really know what it was. Then they'll come back and say, hey, you didn't know what you were talking about. So now we were kind of nipping that in the bud on the front end by, trying to educate the media, hey, on, the type of alignment, what's a good tackle for the Falcons, how they're trying to teach tackling in this era when, you don't have on pads a lot. Coach Keith made a good point of, it looks just like he got guys running down the field, but he went through everybody's job on the kickoff coverage unit. It was like, hey, first guy to the ball, take away the wide side of the field. And there are rules of covering the kicks and so forth. So, it was really refreshing. A lot of the media, older, younger, women, men, are learning a little bit more football here down in Atlanta. And that's going to hopefully reflect in our coverage of the Falcons.
For sure. We're chatting here with D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Be sure to give him a follow on Twitter, at DOrlandoAJC. And I just want to ask you, D., that's fascinating stuff to hear about how much a coach is going to walk you through actual football stuff. When we hear around the league, certainly we just talked to Matt Fairburn, who covers the Bills, about how they don't want you to even report something like a dropped pass or an interception. And, it's interesting to voice these whether they're complaints or concerns about media restrictions, because fans always come back and they're a little – some really get on your side about it and they want more coverage. Some see it as reporters complaining about their jobs. Oh, you just want to know a lot of stuff. And I just wanted to see if you could put it in perspective. How does this kind of film review and just the openness of the Falcons and in any organization, how does that help play into your ability to cover the team and to produce better stories, and how does that sort of translate to to a fan, how does that benefit the average fan who just wants to know more about the Falcons?
Well, you know, in the good old days, you talk to the assistant coaches on a regular basis, and you learned a lot of, you know, football from them. Nowadays, you can maybe get them, you know, one time in the off season, or, you know, up on 24-hour request during the season on a good team. There's some teams that you don't talk to them at all. So it gives you an opportunity in a non-adversarial setting to discuss the game of football with your coaches and maybe help you understand things better, which will translate into better stories for your readers who have better knowledge about their team. You know, we're not, you know, trying to, you know, recreate the wheel here, but if you're covering a team and there's news that needs to be reported, you know, I don't think covering practice and writing a play-by-play really, you know, provides the reader with a great deal of insight. I mean, it's practice. They don't have tests. You know, I do count some things that I would talk to count that matter. You know, 7-on-7 drills without pads, that's a good drill to keep stats on. You know, the 2-minute offense, when they go to that, my buddy Bob McGinn up in Milwaukee taught me to do that when I covered him up there. But, you know, dropping passes in a 1-on-1 drill was, you know, unless they drop like 10 in a row or, you know, 3 in a row by the number one draft pick, or you just pay Tyrus Price a bunch of money and he's dropping passes, that's news. So we're there to cover the news, not so much the stats. And that's how that translates to the readers, to the common readers. But hopefully some of them understand that.
Darrell, it strikes me that there's more than one way to skin a cat in the NFL. Obviously, you see the Bill Belichicks. We're here in Chicago. You see the John Foxes. We know there will never be a film study here because he won't give us the benefit of the doubt of thinking we'd ever understand his football X's and O's. He wouldn't bother with it. But whether it's Dan Quinn in Atlanta, obviously he comes from the Pete Carroll you know, realm of doing things in Seattle. And we just saw Ron Rivera representing the Carolina Panthers in the NFC. So these are more open, in my opinion anyway, type of coaches who aren't protecting everything like it's a state secret. But even in the same Falcons building, you've got Thomas Dimitroff and Scott Pioli. You mentioned Bill Belichick earlier. What's the contrast like between those guys? And would you agree that you can get this done in more ways than one? You don't have to pretend like the media can't know anything.
Yeah, no question about it. Coach Carroll's, John Clayton tells me about Coach Carroll's operation out there and how open it is. He's like, yeah, I'm basically on the field calling plays. So that's pretty extreme to buff up New England, where you're in a box, a bullpen, 40 yards away from everything.
Right.
You know, you can come up with a formula that works for everybody, that everybody's comfortable with. Are just dealing with people on a professional basis. If Coach Fox is running a double reverse in practice, we know not to report that. We had a problem in Green Bay where they had Sterling Sharp in the shotgun, and one of the young reporters, pre-Wildcat, you know, stuff. And so Coach Holmgren, he got us kicked out of practice for the rest of the year. So, you know, the media, of course, is, going to stick to reporting what they see that's newsworthy and not strategy. That's the fine line. Some coaches want to call everything strategy. We had a problem here with Coach Smith where the tackles were dropping like flies and they were moving tackles around. That's news. That's right. Not strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kicked us out because we were reporting position change. And, we've held the rule of 22 steadfast for a long time. And I tell you, if anything happens to the 22 starters, we're reporting it. And so the coaches know that. Smitty knew it. Smitty didn't know it. The PR department here wouldn't tell him. They wouldn't take our side because he's the head coach. And I was like, hey, you know this is going to come up. And it didn't come up till year 5. And, Lamar Holmes was moving from left to right tackle. He reported it, and he lost it on that, and we ended up getting kicked out of practice there. But, the fine line is, hey, news versus strategy. Okay, if we cross the line into strategy, then, you know, some of the media rights can be taken away. And then you got some coaches that think everything is strategy. So that's where we're at with this.
Yeah, for sure. And you brought up some examples of when a reporter does something that does cross that line into strategy or breaks a rule and it kind of hurts everyone else. And that, I think, is a big part of it and something we as media need to understand is that we do have a role in all of this and sometimes we do mess up. And just was curious, as someone who's overseen the Pro Football Writers of America, is there a way, how do you go about improving sort of this knowledge and understanding on the media's part, everyone who's covering, because you've got credentials just sort of expanding out here. The Combine had the most credential requests by far ever. You have sort of new people stepping in, younger reporters. They might not know all the rules and someone might make a mistake, not even on purpose, and it gets kind of everyone in trouble or at least sort of puts them in a bad light to the players who sort of lump us all in together. Is there anything that the organization is doing or can do to try and fix some of that problem when it comes to just the missteps of the media?
Yeah, no question about it. And we've had a better handle on this in the past where, you know, there might have been a PFWA pool reporter. There is a pool reporter in the city, but not like kind of the president of the media corps for that city. But certainly the pool reporter in that city should apprise the local media of the rules and make sure that they're abreast of what we can and can't report. And certainly, like, when the teams come in and say, hey, you know, 11 on 11's off, you know, we don't want, you know, our plays, our signals on video. That makes sense. So, a little bit more structure from our side, a little bit more structure from the team side should help to alleviate that. Certainly in the event-type setting like the Combine, we've got a lot more bloggers and draftnik people and, you know, kind of seasonal reporters, folks. But, you know, maybe some of them will graduate into the main press corps who regularly covers a team, which, you know, is one of our requirements to be a member. So, I think it's just a process that's going to be ongoing. We certainly put in place when we changed the bylaws a couple of years ago to make room for some of the bloggers and the digital era, and we're feeling our way as we move forward.
Outstanding stuff from Daryl Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We appreciate it so much, and unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to ask you how the Falcons are going to rush the passer this year. Do you think we could get you back in a number of weeks or whatever as the season gets a little bit closer and talk a little football? I know it's such a novel concept.
Sure, no problem. Let's do that. Talk to Richard Smith today to get some answers on how that's going to go down. I'll be more than happy to come back on with you guys and talk about it.
All right, outstanding. Thank you again so much, D. It was such a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we will talk to you again very soon down the road, okay?
All right, great. Arthur and Nate, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks.
Well, the pleasure was certainly all ours. That was awesome. Quite a guest and such a wealth of knowledge, both on the Falcons and just kind of the inner workings of the PFWA. And I know I learned a lot, Nate. What about you?
Yeah, I think he was a perfect guest because we started this and we wanted someone from the Bills and we wanted someone from the Falcons just to sort of show the dynamic and the stark differences between how teams allow themselves to be covered. And then you have a guy here who's overseen the entire organization and set up the rules. And so that's a big part of this is trying to find this middle ground between teams and media where they all have, you know, competing goals and similar goals at the same time. They want fans informed. They have different definitions of how to do it. PFWA steps in with sort of the compromise, and it's just neat to talk to someone who's been in the inner workings there and see if we can fix some of this nonsense going on.
Yeah, absolutely. What struck me about hearing something similar from both Matthew and Dee, it is up to the media to understand what's news and what isn't. And I thought you saw both of them, or you heard, excuse me, both of them really hit on that and the importance of it. And it does speak to the fact that obviously we have a role in this. And if it sounds like we're just curmudgeon-y complainers, you know, and the PR staffs, all 32 of them are trying to do us wrong, it's not all that. We're all in this together, but it would just like to feel like we're all in this together a little
right,
bit more often.
For sure.
So that was our podcast today. We had a blast with you talking about media relations. We're going to be doing this throughout the off season, and we promise anything that we said on the podcast today, you can tweet about it, you can write about it. We don't have any restrictions whatsoever, so we would encourage you to do just that. And I do want to take a second just to thank our sponsor, Loot Crate. It's a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. Pop culture is full of brave new worlds and societies in flux that don't always turn out for the best. June's theme will be exploring some of the ways things can go wrong with dystopia, featuring classics RoboCop, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, and The Matrix, and new faves BioShock Infinite and Fallout 4. We've got a figure, cool collectibles, and, of course, our dystoporific monthly fee. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that can include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off on any new subscription. That's Loot Crate. We do thank them, and we thank you more than anyone for being with us. We hope you will join us again next week for the Pro Football Weekly podcast. For Nate, for John Solly, for Dan Mott, I am Arthur Arkish, and we really appreciate you joining us.